VOA, the science edition of Press Conference USA. Here is your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome to the science edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I am Rick Pantaleo. The possibility of a giant asteroid striking planet Earth has served as a great dramatic plot device for television and motion picture writers, with recent movies such as Don't Look Up, Deep Impact, and Armageddon becoming blockbusters. But the reality is that there have been comparatively few serious asteroid impacts over the millions of years of Earth's history. The most famous of these happened about 65 million years ago when a 10-kilometer asteroid struck Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. This set off what scientists call the Cretaceous-Paleogene, or KT, mass extinction event, which killed off about three-quarters of animal and plant species at the time, including the once-dominant dinosaurs. NASA, which tracks near-Earth objects, says that there are about 28,000 comets and asteroids currently occupying our planet's neighborhood, with a number of them rising daily. Yet, space agency officials say they don't know of any object currently threatening our planet. In fact, they assure us that it is unlikely that any is likely to strike Earth within the next several hundred years. They add that if NASA were to detect one, there would be plenty of time, years or decades, to take protective action. Today, we'll talk about asteroids and other space objects, what could happen if a serious event were to take place, and what is being done to protect our planet from such a catastrophic strike. Today's program is the first of two about the potential threat of comets and asteroids and what is being done to defend our planet. My guest for today's show is Dr. Paul Chodas. He is the manager of NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Dr. Chodas, what are near-Earth objects and how are they distinguished from other similar space objects?
Near-Earth objects are the natural asteroids and comets in the solar system that are on orbits which bring them into the Earth's region of the solar system. So kind of within, you know, one distance of the Earth-Sun distance of the Sun itself. So they are basically natural objects that come into the Earth's region of the solar system.
What is considered to be Earth's neighborhood? I understand that you're monitoring, or various agencies are monitoring, objects that are in Earth's neighborhood. What is considered to be Earth's neighborhood? How far to Earth can an object be considered a NEO?
Well, curiously, it's regarded as a distance from the Sun, 1.3 times the distance, Earth-Sun distance. So that's about 100 million miles. So that's about 130 million miles of the Sun. And that's kind of a sphere. So if the any asteroid that comes within that sphere of what we call the Earth's region of the solar system, we regard as a near-Earth object.
That's a big neighborhood.
That's very big. And that's why we have more definitions for, you know, more specific proximities to the Earth.
And many of us have heard different names of the near-Earth objects, or even objects in outer space like asteroids and comets. Can you tell us the difference between these different objects?
Sure. An asteroid is a generally rocky body orbiting the Sun, whereas a comet, which also orbits the Sun, is mostly ices and frozen ices that give off gases when they heat up. So the appearance of the object is very different. A comet has a fuzzy atmosphere and a long tail, which is all of the dust and material debris that comes off when these gases heat up. So it's basically based on the appearance of the object. And then we have what are called meteoroids, and those are really, really tiny asteroids. We kind of draw the distinction of asteroids as being anything that is larger than roughly a meter in size, because we can detect meter-sized asteroids from the ground, and we can detect them in space. So when it gets really small, we call them meteoroids. And then, of course, if they should enter the atmosphere, that's a meteor as it goes through the atmosphere and turns bright and starts burning up. And then if it lands on the ground, if any pieces land on the ground, as opposed to disintegrating into dust, those pieces we call meteorites. So that's kind of how we define all the terms.
Could you tell us a little bit about NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies and the work it does?
Yes, we call it CNEOS, or CNEOS. We are the NASA Center for Calculating the Orbits of these objects around the sun. We calculate that based on the mathematics and the known equations that these bodies have to follow. So we calculate an orbit and then predict where the asteroid might be going and how close it might be coming to the Earth in the future and whether or not there's any chance that it could hit.
How many NEOs are your office keeping their eye on at the present time?
Yeah, well, over 28,000 have been discovered to date, and that's of all the sizes. So we have NASA funds several surveys around the world searching for asteroids. We have one in Arizona near Tucson. We have a couple of them in Hawaii, and there are other surveys around the world that are searching for near-Earth asteroids and near-Earth objects every dark night. They scan the entire dark sky every dark night looking for moving objects.
I know that there have been a couple of missions to asteroids and to even a comet. So my question is, where and how does your organization get its data to make its predictions of near-Earth objects?
Well, yes. These are measurements of the positions of asteroids on the sky. So it's kind of like celestial latitude and longitude. We will use those coordinates in our calculations of the orbit. And astronomers around the world always measure these positions of the asteroids and the comets. And we use those in our calculations. And we get literally millions of data points on all the asteroids altogether. A typical asteroid will have dozens, if not hundreds, of measurements and over time. And we then fit the kind of the elliptical orbit around the sun that best fits through all of those measurements on the sky. So we have sort of a model of the asteroid orbit, and we adjust the model to get the orbit that fits the observed data precisely. Now, since the forces on asteroids are well known very precisely, our orbits can be extremely precise if we have a long enough time period over which measurements. And some of our orbits are really, really accurate, surprisingly so. And on the order of 10 kilometers, let's say, over a distance of 100 million kilometers, for example. So it's really, really an accurate measurement. And so those are optical measurements. So these come from images of the sky taken optically. And then the positions of the stars, we know from our star catalogs, and we can infer the positions of the moving object, which is just appears as a dot. And those are kind of a celestial latitude and longitude. There's a second type, which is radar. Now, if an asteroid gets close enough to the Earth and is large enough, then we can shine radar beams at it and then measure the time for the return echo. And we get a very, very precise measurement of the distance to the asteroid. And we factor those into our orbit calculations as well.
And near-Earth objects are broken down to, I understand, into two groups, near-Earth asteroids and near-Earth comets. What is the distinction between your observations of both? I mean, what do you tend to monitor more?
Well, there are far more asteroids than comets in general. About 1% of the objects are comet, and that's true of the near-Earth object population as well. So there are a few comets that come within this definitional sphere around, you know, the sun, in the Earth's neighborhood of the solar system. But 99% of these objects are asteroids, and that's simply nature. Nature dictates that comets are fragile objects, and they do tend to disintegrate. So if they get in close to the sun, if they come within into the Earth's neighborhood of the sun too many times, eventually they'll break up, simply because they're fragile objects consisting of ices which boil off, and so eventually they'll just fall apart. So most of our objects we're keeping track of are asteroids.
Dr. Chodas, I understand that there are near-Earth asteroids, but also something called potentially hazardous asteroids, or PHAs. What is a PHA, and what are their typical sizes, and how are they classified?
Sure. Well, that's a category that I referred to earlier that's more precise. A PHA is an asteroid that comes within a certain distance, about 5 million miles, of the Earth's orbit. So if you think of ellipses around the sun, the Earth's orbit is almost circular, and we have elliptical asteroid orbits. If they don't intersect or come very close, as you would have two rings, let's say, and they don't come very close together, then you would consider them not very hazardous because these rings essentially are fairly constant in time. They don't change too much. But if the asteroid orbit comes close to the Earth's orbit, then it is potentially hazardous. We also put a requirement that the size be large enough to be hazardous. We put around 140 meters as a kind of a threshold size on that. So 140 meters and larger, and an orbit which comes within about 5 million miles, 7 million kilometers of the Earth's orbit. And that makes it a potentially hazardous asteroid. And we have close to around 2,000 of those asteroids that satisfy those two conditions. So there's plenty of objects to monitor. But that is our job, to calculate and predict large impacts. And we have a webpage. I mentioned the Close Approach webpage that CNEOS runs. There's also the impact monitoring, this what we call Sentry webpage, that lists all of the asteroids for which we cannot completely rule out an impact and which have, you know, a 0.001% chance of hitting the Earth decades from now. You can look for close approaches of NEOs. That's what I referred to. But impact risk is what I was referring to. And Sentry is our long-term software package that searches for all asteroids, searching for potential impacts 100 years into the future. And then we will provide a table. If you included all possible asteroids, it has 1,365 asteroids that have some chance of impacting the Earth. And then we order it by kind of probability. And today, by the way, at the top of the list is an asteroid that we're monitoring closely that is on the order of 70 meters in size that has a small chance of impacting next year on July the 4th, as it turns out. But the probability is still relatively small, 1 in 1,700. But as we get more data, more measurements of its position, and we just accumulate larger and larger sets of data, the orbit gets more and more accurate. It's kind of like on a piece of paper, you have a bunch of dots close together and you say, you know, fit a line through that. Well, you can kind of fit many lines that kind of can come close. But as the dots spread out, and dots are measurements in my case, as they spread out and you get them over, you know, 10 inches, then there's really, you know, not the accuracy of the line that fits them all is much better. And so what I'm trying to say is that as we get more data on this asteroid, we'll be able to compute an orbit better and better. And I expect we'll be able to rule out that July 4th impact next year. But right now it's at the top of the list. So we color it green, which means Torino scale one.
And I'm curious, what would be the factors that would change the trajectory of an asteroid, say, that it's more of a danger to Earth? I mean, what steers it? What powers it?
Well, it's gravity. It's almost all gravity. So, and the equations of gravity, according to Newton, are extremely precise. So when I say that we're adjusting the orbit, we're simply getting a better and better estimate of what the true orbit is. You know, if we had infinitely precise measurements, we would know its orbit exactly, and either hits or won't hit. And I expect this one will be a miss, because kind of like darts on a large dartboard, and the Earth is a tiny little circle in the middle. And if it's a whole bunch of possible orbits, you know, the likelihood is it's going to miss. In any case, the effects that change an asteroid's orbit are mostly gravity. So we have to account for the gravity of the sun, obviously, is dominant, but the Earth and the Jupiter and all the planets affect it, and some other larger asteroids affect the orbits of these things. And we account for all of that in our calculations. I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, but yes, it does. Yes, it does. And as a matter of fact, I think I've seen a couple of documentaries about the role that Jupiter plays in protecting Earth and other planets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yes.
The gatekeeper, so to say.
Yes, yes. Especially from cometary orbits. It tends to scatter the orbits and drive them. It make their orbits much more elongated, and kind of which either causes them to go into the sun or be expelled from the solar system.
Let's take a break. You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm your host, Rick Pantaleo. I'd like to remind you that Press Conference USA is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also connect with us on Facebook at VOA Current Affairs, or Facebook and Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA, or just send us an email to PCUSA@voanews.com. We're back with the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Today we're discussing asteroids and other near-Earth objects. This program is the first of two about the possible threat of near-Earth objects and what is being done to defend our planet. My guest is Dr. Paul Chodas. He is the manager of NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Dr. Chodas, let's talk for a minute about the discovery of objects that travel into our solar system from another galaxy, the first one being Oumuamua.
Oumuamua. We have the definitive orbit on that one as well. For anything orbiting the sun, we calculate the highest precision orbit. And what we could see on that particular object was the fact that there were some non-gravitational forces acting on a very small, maybe a tenth of a percent of the gravitational forces, but still our measurements were very accurate, as they often are. And astronomers took as many detailed measurements as they could while the asteroid, the interstellar object, was still bright enough. And we use all of those and fit it through our best equations and calculations, and we could see that it was being affected by non-gravitational forces. Now, that's a puzzle, because when you look at the image of the object, it's stellar. There's no coma, there's no tail, you can't see anything coming off of it, even in the largest of telescopes, even in Hubble. And so what was the gas coming off that was pushing it? It was the question. And you hear these crazy stories that, alien spacecraft, or it was some kind of solar sail, you know, and sunlight does push a very light asteroid around, and we can detect that sometimes. But it would have had to have been really aluminum foil over hundreds of meters in size, and that's just ridiculous. So that one was a puzzle. But it was going so fast and exited the inner solar system so quickly that we would never be able to catch up with it. It's too bad. We'll wait for the next one.
From what I understand, there were two objects spotted so far, interstellar.
That's correct. Yes. The other one was Borisov, the comet. My whole career since the 1980s, even, we were looking for those comets which might have originated from outside the solar system. And finally, we saw one several years ago, Borisov. But the Oumuamua one object totally surprised us, because we expected these to be comets, interstellar objects to be comets. The reason being is that in our solar system, the Oort cloud is filled with the comets that Jupiter, through these gravitational interactions we're talking about, but enough velocity to escape. So there must have been just millions of similar objects that did escape from the Earth's solar system, and they're cometary by analogy with the Oort cloud objects. So by extension, another solar system should have thrown out a lot of comets as well. And so we expected for decades to see an interstellar comet. And we, you know, frequently check our orbits for one of those. But then Oumuamua showed up, and it being an asteroid totally shocked us. The first object being an interstellar object being an asteroid, not a comet.
Absolutely fascinating. This is a fascinating topic.
Very much. Yeah. And just every day we come in, and there's, with NASA's discovery efforts, there's like a dozen new asteroids found every day. And so we have automated everything here, but we get emails on all of the discoveries each day. And it used to be that I could keep up with them and say, oh, that's an interesting orbit, or that one's interesting. But there are so many now that we just let our software tell us. We've programmed it to tell us what the interesting ones are. But I cannot possibly keep up with the dozen new asteroids found each day. And by the way, last year, 2021, was a record-setting year with over 3,000 near-Earth asteroids discovered. Hats off to the discovery teams, which I referred to, those ones in Arizona and Hawaii in particular, found the lion's share of the near-Earth asteroids just by scanning the dark skies every night and looking for these moving objects.
I've noticed in the news media that there are plenty of stories about approaching asteroids, approaching near-Earth asteroids. It seems as though it's clickbait, where they're basically hyping that an object is going to get close to us. How often does an object get that close to Earth that could pose a potential danger?
Well, yes, you see more and more of those stories, and you wonder, well, are the number of objects increasing that are coming close to the Earth? And the answer is no. These objects have been coming close to the Earth all along. We simply have not been detecting them. And especially that refers to the small ones, down at 10-meter size or even smaller. Whereas before, we would not even know that those objects are coming close to the Earth. Now we can see those in space, we can calculate their orbits, and we can predict when they come close. And we make all of our predictions public on our CNEOS website. You can Google that and go to the close approach pages, and we keep them up to date. And every day we have, it seems, a half a dozen or so close approaches to the Earth. In general, they are not hazardous at all. These are often at very far distances from the Earth, let's say several times the distance of the moon. And often these are really small objects, less than 10 meters in size, let's say. So they're not hazardous at all. One thing that is hyped in the media are these stories that, oh, the asteroid is coming close. Let's say it's coming within the distance of the moon. And they write scary stories about how, oh my goodness, it could hit and this sort of stuff. What is not said is that in many cases, such as this asteroid we had last week, in many cases, the asteroid's orbit is known extremely accurately. If we've been tracking it for years or decades, we can predict where that asteroid is and how close it will come to within 20, 30 kilometers easily when it comes close to the Earth. And often it comes no closer than 2 million kilometers or something. So it's a distant approach often on our lists, the ones you read about. And we know that distance really accurately.
A potentially deadly asteroid. How close to Earth can it come before Earth's gravity starts pulling it in?
We factor in Earth's gravity to large distances. So Earth's gravity does indeed pull it in, but its velocity will take it back out again. So unless it's headed kind of dead reckoning exactly towards the Earth, which it, on the scale of the solar system, is a very small object, it will come in, go by the Earth, and go outwards at the same velocity. But an angle will change. So the Earth's gravity affects it, but does not cause it to impact because of the velocity of the asteroid. Now, in some cases, asteroids are headed towards the Earth, and we have had four small, really tiny asteroids detected in space that did impact the Earth. These all burned up in the atmosphere because they're small, and this is not unusual at all. You could consider it simply a bright meteor. Several of them over Africa, in fact, one in Sudan in 2008 and one in Namibia, I think it was, just a few years ago. So these were asteroids detected in space, but very, very tiny. We could predict where they would hit, of course, not with much warning. It was just within a few hours, and they just burned up. They became a very bright meteor when they impacted.
I'm remembering several years ago, there was a meteor or asteroid, some kind of near-Earth object that flew over parts of Russia and caused some serious damage. I believe the city was Chelyabinsk.
That's right. Yes, that was a larger object, about 20 meters in size, which came from the direction of the sun. Now, we had another object that same day in 2013, February it was, passing by the Earth, and NASA had produced a show and was producing and broadcasting a live show about the other asteroid. And the night before the show was to air, and I was the featured speaker, and the night before the asteroid was the close approach, before the show was to air in the morning, I heard reports of a giant fireball over Chelyabinsk, Russia. And I was a little skeptical initially because that's a very rare event, if true. But I saw the videos and they were very convincing. And indeed, it was a large asteroid that impacted on the same day as the other asteroid, which passed by completely independently of the Earth, that very close that same day. Yes, that was a 20-meter asteroid, which impacted the atmosphere at something like 18 kilometers per second. And that's where the huge energy comes from. It's the high velocity of these asteroids when they hit. And because it was 20 meters in size, rather surprisingly large, much larger than the little ones that I talked about earlier, that one produced about a half a megaton of energy of air blast when it went through the atmosphere and broke and shattered many windows. And there were some injuries from flying glass and this sort of thing. A very bright flash and a large plume across the sky over Chelyabinsk. Since it was a larger asteroid, there are fewer larger asteroids. We think that was a rare event, something on the order of once every 50 to 80 years that would happen. So we don't expect to see that again, but you never know. It could happen any day. But it was certainly an exciting day, and we had to quickly adjust our TV show that morning to account for and provide the preliminary results of, you know, the energy and the size of that asteroid and talk about its trajectory having come from the direction of the sun. Now, that's an interesting question there. Why didn't we find that one? The answer to that is that it came from the daytime side of the Earth. Earlier on, maybe months earlier, it was on the nighttime side, but it was too small to be detected at a significant distance from the Earth. So these ones that come from the day side are more difficult to find, but they are in general small. And if they are larger, we will see them on a prior passage in the nighttime side. So we think that we would discover the larger ones that would come from the daytime side. And, you know, we would discover it on an earlier passage and predict this potential impact if it should happen.
I'm remembering from that time coverage of the Chelyabinsk impact, and I know quite a bit of the asteroid was shedding material as it crashed through the Earth's atmosphere. But I was surprised at the size of the object that was left that impacted the ground. I remember seeing footage of scientists pulling the object out of the ground, and it was of considerable size.
Yeah, in fact, it landed in a lake, a frozen lake. And so it left a big circular hole in the ice and went to the bottom. And it was recovered, I think, in the next summer. The 20-meter object was reduced to a 1-meter meteoroid or meteorite recovered from the bottom of the lake. And that's typical. 99% or more of these small asteroids will burn up and disintegrate into dust. So when you saw the dust cloud, images, you know, of the dust cloud on the sky, that was what was left of the 99% of the asteroid reduced to dust. There were some meteorites, by the way. I should point that out. There were, of course, the asteroid sheds little meteorites, and these are little rocks. I have one myself that's maybe a centimeter in size, and there were some larger ones. But the main piece, the largest piece, was only 1 meter in size.
And finally, Dr. Chodas, according to the World Atlas website, experts and scientists, researchers have stated that in the past 600 million years, about 60 asteroids or similar objects were larger in size have hit the Earth. And three of these impact events have caused the mass extinction of life on the planet. How likely do you think such an asteroid or object is likely to hit Earth?
Very unlikely for several reasons. First of all, the large asteroids are few and far between. There are not very many of them. And when I say large, I mean a kilometer or larger, such as the one that passed by last week was about a kilometer in size. And if an asteroid of that size should impact, then we are likely to see global effects, as in dust thrown into the atmosphere and affecting climate and that sort of thing. Now, the good news is that, first of all, there are very few of those, less than 1,000. And secondly, we have found 95% of them and are tracking them. And we know that none of them are headed for an impact over the Earth. In fact, on our list of all the asteroids, there are no asteroids of significant size that are headed for an impact with any significant probability. So there's nothing to worry about in the sense that we don't see in our calculations and our predictions of close approaches, we don't see any chance of a significantly large asteroid hitting the Earth over the next 100 years or so, which is our time horizon. Now, there are still some which we haven't discovered yet. Some of them are this large size, about 5% of the population. So about, let's say about 30 of the large ones we haven't discovered yet. We're still searching for those. And then of the smaller sizes, of course, there's more significant fraction that we haven't discovered yet. And that's why we need these large next generation survey telescopes, such as the NEO Surveyor mission, which will look for asteroids. It has a much more sensitive detector to look for asteroids farther out. And the Rubin telescope that will be looking at the sky from the ground with a much larger telescope. And so we can go deeper and see asteroids at larger distances. So in the future, we'll be finding many more asteroids and be able to find virtually all of the asteroids of significant size that could impact the Earth. And then we'll run our calculations and analyses of when they might be coming close to the Earth. In all likelihood, we'll be able to rule out any chance of any significant impact over the next 100 years.
Dr. Paul Chodas, thanks again for joining us today and filling us in on near-Earth objects.
Thanks for having me.
That was Dr. Paul Chodas. He is the manager of NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. If you would like to learn more about asteroids and comets and the work of NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies, you can visit their website at cneos.jpl.nasa.gov. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this science edition of Press Conference USA. I hope you enjoyed today's show and that you will join us for part two of our program on near-Earth objects and planetary defense. This is Rick Pantaleo reminding you to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.